everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Cabot Cove Gazette, the world's best Murder, She Wrote podcast. I'm your co-host, Bridget Keys, and I'm joined today by Frank Berman. Frank earned his BA in art history from the University of Michigan, Dearborn. He ended up working on Capitol Hill in DC for a couple of years before moving back to Michigan to earn a master's in public policy. His career is now focused on data analytics, but Frank is a very accomplished film critic and general film knowledge person. He has occasionally hosted Secret Cinema at the Maple Theater in Bloomfield, Michigan, which is where I've hosted Secret Cinema a couple of times, and it's how we met. Frank's hosted Raiders of the Lost Ark and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, A Shot in the Dark, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I mean, these are pretty stellar films. And he also hosted a James Bond series at the theater with high praise. Frank's appeared on the podcast Screen Drafts, introducing their Teacher's Draft and Vietnam War Draft. And of course, he is a fan of Murder, She Wrote, which is why he is my guest host today. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Bridget. How's it going?
I'm so glad to have you here. Tell us a little bit about your relationship to Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, like I was saying before, I mean, I'm an 80s child. And one of the things that I watched as a kid was some episodes like Murder, She Wrote, Mr. Belvedere, which we can talk about later, you know, like Family Ties. I was just hooked on the television, you know, during the 80s and then a little bit in the 90s. You know, then, you know, we started to do our own thing. When you grow up, you have go to school, college, and getting a job. It just, everything was set back with like watching all those old episodes. And then when you get older, you appreciate the things that you missed out on and the things that you used to love. And so you get reacquainted watching your old shows back from the 80s and 90s. And then most recently, I started watching old episodes of Murder, She Wrote. I just got hooked. For instance, I rewatched the first season recently. And I'm just like, this is so much fun. You know, we were just talking about the episode where the family patriarch gives his whole inheritance to his dog, which is a must, though. But then we have this like murder mystery craze now going on with like Knives Out, It Runs in the Family, a bunch of other things that are happening right now. Mm-hmm. So it's like a perfect timing to get reacquainted and to be in love again with Murder, She Wrote, Angela Lansbury, and Jessica Fletcher.
Yeah. And I think we have a really fun episode to talk about today. So today we're talking about season 4, episode 6, It Runs in the Family, which is an Emma McGill episode.
And yes, it is.
We don't even actually see Jessica Fletcher this entire time, but I love Emma McGill. So I was really happy to spend 45 minutes with her. How do you feel about her? Because I think some people think she's too over the top and too campy.
Exactly, though. But I wanted to ask you, too, this must not be like the first episode Emma has not appeared in, or... Emma
yeah, so we previously saw Emma in season 2, Sing a Song of Murder, where she's introduced and we see her dance hall. And there's a reference to it in this episode. They reference the Oliver Trumbull and his daughter incident. And that's referring to that episode where Olivia Hussey actually is trying to kill Emma so mm-hmm. that she won't marry her dad. And in this episode, Emma makes reference to the fact that she never got married. And she says, oh, it just wasn't for me, which is really sad yeah. if you've seen that episode, because she actually wanted to marry Oliver yeah. and his daughter got in the way. And then they never ended up getting married.
No, it's sad, though. But seeing Emma, too, it's like Superman, like cannot think of the word right now, like the bizarre world, if you will. Like yeah. you have Jessica Fletcher in the U.S., and then we have Emma in the UK with her quite nifty Cockney accent, if you will. So it's just like a good like yin yang with the
She's
two.
Like Bizarro Jessica is what you mean?
Bizarro Jessica in a good way, though.
For sure. I mean, she's like, you know, if we think about Jessica she wears like these very beautiful clothes, but they're kind of conservative. And mm-hmm. her hair is this normal shade of strawberry blonde, and her makeup's yes. quite subdued. And then we have Emma with like this bright red hair and just yep. absolutely garish makeup and clothing. And then the accents too. I mean, they indicate such a class difference between the two of them, right?
No,
like the whole
definitely.
Crux of this episode is like Emma is supposed to be lower class than these people. And it's a source of great shame for the family she's visiting that their relative is in love with someone so low class.
No, exactly. You hit it on point where Jessica's refined, but Emma is just less refined, if you will, just like with her accent. It's just not polished as Jessica, even with the contrast with like the two different accents, you can tell it's just not like, well, I shouldn't say like well-educated, but just in a different class style, if you will. It's just not as structured as Jessica, put it that way.
Yeah, but you know, what I think is interesting is how we never, I mean, I kept waiting for the moment where she's going to call Jessica and be like,
yes,
hey, there's an investigation. I need you to jump on a plane and come help me. And instead, we just get her doing the investigation herself. And so the episode sort of, I mean, the title gives it away, right? It sort of vindicates her abilities to be smarter than we expect her to be. And she solves the mystery all by herself.
No, she certainly does. And it does surprise me too. Like you mentioned, she does not like consider calling Jessica, contacting her in any way. Like, hey, look what's happening to me over there. It's like, she's probably had like, be funny too, if they had like a cutscene and then Jessica wasn't available because she was solving another crime though. But we know the obvious. But we know the obvious too. It's like, we gotta leave Jessica Fletcher alone. It has to be all Emma.
I mean, I love that idea though, that like maybe Emma did try to call her and Jessica's like busy doing episode 4.5 and she's like, yes, I'm in the middle of a different murder right now. You're on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another murder has happened at Cabot Cove. Can't take your message right now, but please leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that she would call her and Jessica would show up is what happens in Sing a Song of Murder. And then, you know, we also have seen that multiple times in the series. Like I'm thinking of the Magnum PI episode where she like drops everything and flies to Hawaii. But I do really like the fact that Emma got to do this one on her own. And then, of course, the title, It Runs in the Family, is because the detective is like, oh, wow, at the end, after she solved everything, he's like, oh, my gosh, you should consider being a detective, too. Like, you're really good at this. And she says, it runs in the family. Yeah. So we sort of get
the freeze frame shot.
Yeah, the obligatory freeze frame of them laughing and celebrating.
Yes.
I love when we have that at the end. Like there's, I think season 3 got kind of dark and we kind of stopped having that.
Yes.
And to me, that's the fun of Murder, She Wrote, is like somebody literally dies, but it's fine at the end. Everybody's happy again. It's no big deal.
And then was it the sheriff's name, Tom Bosley's like, here we go again. It's like curmudgeons, but oh, well, we solved the case. Let me just go back to taking my nap and doing my old regular thing.
Yes.
Yes.
So let's talk about the murder in this one. So Emma is summoned by Mr. Belvedere to this wealthy estate, which is the home of her former lover, who's now a Viscount. Ooh. This is very fancy. He thinks he's dying, and then he actually does get poisoned and end up dead. And he is also suspicious, and so becomes Emma, that his father, who just died a few weeks ago, was also poisoned.
Jeez, what a shocker. What a strange coincidence.
Right? Like, I'm like, of course he was poisoned. Like, that seems really obvious.
I know.
And then, but eventually they like dig up his body and have to verify that he was in fact poisoned. And the whole reason that any of this happened was because his sister-in-law just really wants her husband to be the Viscount so she can be the wife of the Viscount.
Yes.
And it seems screamingly obvious to me the entire time because she's such an insufferable woman and she's a total snob and she just keeps talking about when she's the Viscount. But I guess I'm just, anyway, I don't know. I felt like the actual plot, as often happens in Murder, She Wrote, is not that complicated or interesting and that the solution was very obvious. What did you think?
It's weird because for a moment, usually like the person that you least suspect or like the nicest person in the episode. Yeah. So immediately, like having never seen this episode before, I had a feeling that Christopher Hewitt was like the murderer because he was like very presentable to Emma. He was very pleasant the whole time. Like he was willing to help her out.
Yeah.
And was backing like the bad camp the whole time, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah.
And just like saying to the family, no, this was his true love. I'm the one who caused his biggest regret in his whole life. I'm not going to let this happen this time. Well, if you don't do anything, if you don't terminate this relationship, you're through. Find another job. And I'm just like,
Yeah,
Maybe
it's
that's,
like he was like almost too sincere, like too nice. So you're like, there must be more under the surface.
Exactly. I
But there's
mean,
not. He's just
no.
actually nice. Like it's the least complicated episode ever.
Yes. No, it is. And everyone was like, even the inspector by Anthony Newley was even like compliant with Emma the whole time. So there wasn't any like bickering between like good cop, bad cop, if you will, like you've seen in like episode three with like the comedy club in the first season. And like San Francisco's like, get off my case, Jessica. I don't need your crap.
We often have people who are like, either she's too old, or she's a woman, or she's untrained, and so therefore, needs to like leave things alone. And this guy was sort of like, yeah, Emma, you might be onto something. Help me out here, right?
No, most definitely. And we can talk about the aunt by Carolyn Seymour. What was her name again?
Who knows? I mean, I love Carolyn Seymour for playing a Romulan in Star Trek TNG. And so, like, to my mind, that is all she'll ever be. And therefore, she will always also be evil. So when she turns out to be the murderer, I'm completely unsurprised because she's a devious Romulan. Why would you ever trust her?
She is, though, but she was actually in one of my favorite childhood movies of all time. And I'll give you a clue. It was shot in the early 80s. It took place in Detroit, though, but it was shot on like I think Pasadena too. It was associated with Aaron Spelling, and the main lead was Michael Keaton. I think some of the listeners are saying this title out loud. It's Mr. Mom. She played one of like the snobbiest like ad execs.
Oh God, I write about Mr. Mom in my 80s TV work. I forgot about that movie somehow, even though I spent years of my life with it.
No,
She is in that, isn't
yeah,
she?
she is. She like gives Terry Garr's character a very hard time. Their
Yeah.
boss is Martin Mull, who
Yes.
like Carolyn Seymour's character tells Terry Garr's like, keep your eyes open, your mouth quiet, and do whatever he says. And he's like very like congenial. He's very nice, Martin Mull, and he actually gives Terry Garr a very nice time compared to Carolyn Seymour, who's like a complete like hideous person, if you will. We're doing like a PG version of
See,
the
she's
language
always awful,
terminology.
I'm telling
Yeah,
you.
she is awful.
So, I mean, in that sense, it's like it's a bit of weird casting for Murder, She Wrote, right? Like, if you're gonna cast her and she always plays terrible people, we're gonna assume she's the murderer. Like, there's no surprise when she, in fact, is the murderer here, right? I mean, she's been absolutely insufferable. She's rude to Emma, she's rude to Jane Leaves, who we'll talk about in a second. She thinks they're both beneath her family. All she cares about is her husband becoming the Viscount when his brother dies. Like, she's eager for this guy to die. So, like, and then, of course, I think we're supposed to believe that she might not have actually committed murder had he, we're told he's dying. He's very ill. And I think had he actually died of natural causes, maybe she wouldn't have, she wouldn't commit murder. Like the murder comes about because once he starts hanging out with Emma, his doctor's like, wow, there's been a miraculous turnaround and you seem healthy as a horse now. And so I think that is supposed to be her motivation. Like, oh, I can't wait for him to die naturally. If he's not actually dying anymore, I'll just bump him off, right?
No, and we can't forget about that was her son Derek. Yeah, she even tried to like murder him, like while he was hunting.
In her defense, she says, she was just taking a shot to scare him. She wasn't actually trying to hit him.
And yeah,
But
that's
yeah,
what she says.
she freaking shoots him
Yeah, I mean, I
to, I
get it.
guess, throw suspicion off herself. Is that the idea?
I guess, who knows? I mean, I think because of the like the lineage, like the Viscount, if I'm pronouncing it correctly again, because I think it was like the uncle that was next in line, and
Yeah.
was it then the other uncle, and then Derek was third in line. So I'm kind of like,
Right. Like once Jeffrey dies, then her husband will become the Viscount. And then after her husband dies, her son will become.
A little bit too soon to murder Derek, I would say. He was just like
Don't
getting
she
very
didn't
anxious.
she said she wasn't actually trying to murder him. She just wanted to take a
I
shot
know.
to sort of, Oh, I know. And you're thinking about the brother too. Like there's a younger brother who's also getting in the way of things, and maybe we need to, get rid of him too. It's messy. And
It is.
also, like, I just want to say, like, she married into this family. She needs to like sit down and like just accept what her lot is. Like, there's an actual sister in this family who will never become the Viscount because the hereditary laws are all according to the male line. And here's this lady who like marries into the family and is trying to run things. And she tells the detective, "You can talk to me. I'm the Viscount's wife." And like, I don't know. I just want to be like, sit down, lady. Like, you're nobody that special. Like, you married into this family. You weren't even born in it.
No, it's like, calm down, Fergie.
Okay, so we have Carolyn Seymour, my favorite Romulan.
Yes.
And then we have, who is the murderer? We have, as we said, Christopher Hewitt, who plays the family solicitor, who is trying to get Emma and Jeffrey, the Viscount, reunited before he dies. And what I think is, I love Christopher Hewitt. And
me too.
I think he plays that like sort of avuncular character really well.
He does.
And as you said, maybe so well that it's like a little bit suspicious. Like, am I supposed to think there's more going on here? But what I think is interesting is that this was actually during Mr. Belvedere.
It was.
Like, what's he doing guest starring in Murder, She Wrote while he's a lead on his own sitcom? That's weird, right?
No, I have a feeling that like him and Andrew Lansbury were close, or he was close with one of the producers. He's on a hot TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's merge the two together. Let's bring him in to guest star. That way we can get some viewerships. Some ratings. Him and Andrew Lansbury, they make a good duo.
Mm-hmm, they totally do. They play really well off each other in these scenes.
Like a Sherlock and Watson type of relationship that they have. Like I was saying before, one's willing to help the other out. And just, they're very nice to each other. They don't get on each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I love about this relationship too. And then I have to mention too about Christopher Hewitt. He is in one of my favorite Mel Brooks movies, The Producers, playing the very out there, like radical, like Broadway producer. I forgot his name. I do not have my IMDb up though, but he has like a beard and everything. He's like a cross dresser in it. It's a very fun movie to watch. So I highly recommend it.
I love The Producers. Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't watched it, it's hilarious. So I highly recommend it.
But I do have to say, Mr. Belvedere was on ABC.
Yes.
So that would have been a huge competitor to Murder, She Wrote.
Exactly.
And they were both pretty highly rated. So it wasn't like they didn't need him for the ratings. Like Murder, She Wrote was a ratings juggernaut. But it is interesting that he's on this.
No, it is.
But I like it because I like him. And you know, he'll always be Mr. Belvedere to me, though.
No, it's my favorite 80s comedy sitcom. I'm sorry. I love The Golden Girls too, though, but Mr. Belvedere is like more close to my heart.
Wow.
No offense to The Golden Girls, but I just like when I was watching Mr. Belvedere as a kid, I just was like the first show that I really belly laughed at.
I that's so interesting because I think I probably as a kid like Mr. Belvedere better, but as an adult, I appreciate The Golden Girls. It's like, it's amazing writing, but
yes.
I think I wanted to be like Wesley and have Mr. Belvedere take care of me. You know,
no.
he seemed like he would be really good at taking care of you. And yeah.
No, for sure. I think that's what attracted me to the show. Just him being like very nice and have this like sense of humor about himself.
Yeah. So we also have Jane Leaves in this, and she plays Tart. She's sort of like the Emma of a younger generation, you know, lower class, garish clothing, who's dating the younger brother. She's his assistant slash girlfriend, and the family all hates her. So, of course, Emma is quite nice to her and they bond. I think it was interesting seeing her in something before Frasier because I didn't know who she was until Frasier.
Yeah, or she was also in Seinfeld as the infamous character from like 92 to 93, the I'll put this in quote, the virgin, if you will.
Jerry
was dating. Yeah, no, it's fascinating to see like all these character actors in this episode and then see them like, and then realize they were like in other series that they're more famous for because are we going to talk about the doctor at all?
Tell me about the doctor.
Ian Abercrombie.
Mr. Pitt.
Mr. Pitt. Yes, from Seinfeld. Next stop, Pottersville. I mean, it's like, I know this guy. Yes, it is Mr. Pitt. And then looking up his IMDb, he was actually a voice actor, like providing his voice to like Emperor Palpatine and like the Star Wars cartoons. That's something that like fascinated me too. Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know that. I thought it was interesting because, of course, I know him as Mr. Pitt. And I remember when Mr. Pitt is like incapacitated, right? And so seeing him as someone who has like his mental faculties about him and is actually quite clever was like a little bit jarring for me. But he plays the doctor and he actually also is quite nice in this. I think his biggest gripe is like they shouldn't dig up the body of Jeffrey's father, the 17th Viscount, because that seems a little...
No,
gross and disrespectful, but the inspector's like, dude, we got to dig this body up. It was probably poisoned.
I agree too. And he was also kind of defensive when the inspectors refused to like accept the fact that it wasn't a heart attack.
Like, yeah, Jeffrey keels over and he's like, oh, like, heart attack, how terrible. And the inspector's like, are you like, stupid? This was murder.
Yes. So it's like, I can't be. I've been a doctor for this family for many years.
Doesn't this make you wonder, like, what exactly was Jeffrey dying of? Because they never tell us specifically. Like, what magic, you know, it just feels very like gothic novel from the 19th century or the 18th century or something. Like, he's dying of something and we don't really know what. And then all it takes is seeing his old girlfriend and going on a, like, having dinner with her. He didn't even have a picnic with her yet. He goes on he has dinner with her and he's like, magically cured of whatever bizarre disease he's dying from.
It was like, a broken
heart. Maybe this is a terrible doctor.
It was a broken heart, Bridget. I don't need a doctor. I don't need a medical degree from Harvard or Michigan to realize that his true disease was losing Emma in the first place. Getting reacquainted with her too. It's just like, I can breathe again.
Yeah.
I can float with the clouds. Yes.
It was really sweet when he says, like, I was married for 34 years, but, like, I never really loved her, which is terrible for the poor woman. But he's like, I never really loved her. Like, you already had my heart, you know, like, I didn't have another to give to someone else. Like, oh, it's kind of sweet, right? And the idea that they'll be reunited now that they're old, it's so sweet. And this stupid family is, like, so mean to them.
I know. When are we going to talk about the parlor song?
Okay, well, said you just mentioned clouds, so that would seem to be a really good segue. Talk about it.
Yes. So basically, they're, you know, after dinner, you know, they're playing the piano. The Viscount invites Emma to play some tunes, you know, something to reminisce of the old days. So she plays something like a standard and then immediately says, no, Emma, I want you to play that one song. He kind of like refuses a bit. It's like, yep, I want you to play that song.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden.
And you can tell, like, she's trying to play something that's like a little more classy too. And he's like, no. I want the music hall song.
No. And it's about an old spooning, if you will. Like, it's all about like, I love you. Let's go spoon together.
How'd you like to spoon with me?
Yes. I have that written, like, spoon with me. Like, everyone's in shock, like, almost like looking at each other, like, what? But the Viscount's like the happiest he's ever been in like 30 some years.
It's true. Why are they so mean? Like, this guy is so happy. He likes this person and she's really nice. Like, what do they care? But yeah, I think we're supposed to think, you know, this is a music hall song.
Yeah.
She's talking about spooning. She's singing in this really exaggerated Cockney accent.
And like very jubilant about the song too, when she's singing and like,
how'd you like to spoon with me?
Yes.
He's so tacky, right? I mean, this is just bringing shame upon their family. And like in Sing a Song of Murder, we saw her perform Goodbye Little Yellow Bird, which was Lansbury's song in The Picture of Dorian Gray. And like that, here we have her singing a song that Lansbury actually sang in one of her old Hollywood musicals, Till the Clouds Roll By.
I did not know that.
I love that little connection for people who know Lansbury's film career.
Yeah, I like how she does this too with like some of the episodes, how she does throw like an Easter egg to maybe one of, like, some of her old films, which I really enjoy. Since being a movie fanatic, I enjoy those like types of Easter eggs.
Have you seen Till the Clouds Roll By?
I have not.
Me either, actually, I have to admit. But there we go. I know it's a song from it and she sings it and it's cute that they had Emma sing it.
No.
Emma's like, what would have happened if Angela Lansbury never left the UK, maybe?
Yes.
Which I guess maybe then means it's a good thing she did.
Point well taken.
Okay, what else do we need to say about this episode?
Let's see. We do have Rosemary Murphy. Now, looked at her bio. She played Atticus Finch's like close friend in To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm. And there is a To Kill a Mockingbird connection with the next episode that we're going to talk about.
Okay. That actually sounds like a good teaser to end the episode with.
Yes.
So maybe we can do that. But if there's anything else you want to go over before we finish recording this episode, we certainly can.
We should. I will add one thing too. The inspector was played by Anthony Newley, who is a well-known song dance composer in the UK, but he is well-known for writing the music lyrics for Willy Wonka and the lyrics for Goldfinger.
I didn't know that.
And he was married shortly too to Joan Collins.
I did not know that. That's a cool connection.
Now you know.
Now we know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, this is a good, well-rounded Emma episode where we have these great guest stars.
Yeah.
Good inspector. And I was going to say too, it's just well-written. You know, you have the typical rich family that hates the patriarchy for some reason, just for the money, which is typical in the Jessica Fletcher world of Murder, She Wrote.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have, like I said, a great, great co-stars that help Emma out, and you really root for them.
Yeah.
And they don't turn out to be the killers. Mostly with every episode, it's oh, this person's nice. He's the killer. It's oh no. It's why'd you have to rot that for me though? But this worked out great.
Oh, I know. The episodes where when Jessica finds out who the killer is, she makes that face and she does the little, of disappointment. And here it's no, it was a bad lady. It was the bad lady all along. And so, we can feel good about everybody else, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You're horrible. Call the police right now. Okay, I will. I won't sell for reinforcement or anything. I won't get into a garage. I'll just call.
I do have to say though, in Carolyn Seymour's, obviously I love to hate her because she always plays bad characters, but I have to give her credit though, because when she confesses, when they catch her and she confesses, the monologue she gives, I mean, she goes to a 12 in rage and explaining how badly she wants this power and money. And she does that sort of evil monologue so well.
Yeah, I know. She's because she's used to playing in that role. She knows how to give 110% for sure.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, I always gripe about the plot. That's kind of my shtick on the Cabot Cove Gazette. You know, I always feel like the plots are too thin and don't really hold up to a half hour podcast scrutiny. And I think this one it holds up. It makes sense. Of course it would be her, but it's so logical that it's we needed a few more twists maybe. But
maybe.
Overall, though, I love this episode, and I think it's fascinating that we had an entire episode without Jessica Fletcher. The only time we see Jessica is a book that Emma is holding with Jessica on the dust jacket. And so, of course, we have Lansbury for the whole time, but we never have Jessica. And I think that is such an interesting choice for them to have made as writers. And I think it's just great fun giving Emma her chance to shine. So this episode is a keeper for me.
No, I agree, too. That's like I was saying before, they did a great job just being a standalone Emma episode. And there's one little error Easter egg too, when she's talking to Jane Levy's character, Christopher Hewitt comes in, they're about to leave. Emma's pint of beer gets tossed off the table and no one notices it. So rewatch that episode, rewatch that scene, and you'll see.
So I think that's going to do it for now. For the Cabot Cove Gazette, I'm Bridget Keys.
And now this is Frank Berman. Frank Berman, yep.
And we'll see you next week. See you next week.
Or next time.
The Cabot Cove Gazette's theme song is Reaching the Sky by Alexander Nakarada, used under Creative Commons license. You can find us on social media. We're Cabot Cove Gazette on Facebook and @Cove Gazette on Instagram and Twitter.